Today on the Rise of the Challenge podcast.
You know, being grateful for every day of your life. I think it's a huge life-changing experience watching somebody take their last breath in your arms. It definitely gave me a big slap across the face to wake up and just to enjoy life every single day, to milk it for everything that you've got, because none of us know when our last day is going to be. It doesn't matter how healthy you are.
Welcome to the Rise to the Challenge podcast. Joining me today, it's Barbara Kendall. How are you doing today, Barbara?
Hi, Alex. I'm fine. How are you today?
We're doing so good. We are so excited to have you on the show to talk about your Rise to the Challenge. What we like to do with all of our guests is go right to the beginning. Talk about where you're from and what you like doing growing up.
Oh, well, I was actually born in England, even though everyone thinks I'm Australian, and I had a very German mother and an extremely British father. So we didn't talk about the war in our family. That's just a joke, but yeah. I was born in England, came out to Australia when I was 1 year of age by ship with my three siblings, and I used to love growing up. Anything that was performance-wise in school plays, I used to love athletics, calisthenics, swimming, anything that was really sporty, to be perfectly honest. Used to love riding my bike with my brother, chasing Mr. Whippy. I don't know if you have Mr. Whippy over in America, but it's an ice cream van. We used to, just climb trees, play cricket together, you name it. We were into it.
You talked about the performance side that you liked growing up, where that really kind of took a path to where you were through your journey. What was exciting about the performance? Was it singing, being on stage, the acting? What specifics?
Well, I'll give you a classic example of what Barbara used to do as a very young girl. I used to do things like round up all the neighborhood kids, and we'd practice for weeks on end doing, say, like a water ballet in my backyard swimming pool. And then, you know, when we had perfected it, I used to invite all the neighborhood mums and dads to bring their little chairs into the back garden, put on the pool light, and on went the music, and off we went with the water ballet. I mean, I used to do that sort of thing all the time. And also I used to do a lot of babysitting when I was young as well. So when I looked after other people's children, I used to put on little performances for when their mum and dad would come home. So yeah, school plays, you know, I was Helen of Troy, you know, anything like that. Yes, I think, I don't know where I got that from, but I just used to love to perform and have fun, basically. Yeah.
Was it hard choosing performance aspects and athletics, or were you able to kind of be able to do both and enjoy doing both?
Oh, no, do both and enjoy. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
With athletics, what from the performance side helped you with athletics? Is there a skill? Is there something that it taught you that helped you from an athletic standpoint?
Yeah, look, I don't think from a performance standpoint, but I definitely had parents that used to cheer me on a great deal. Like, for example, my dad used to take me to little athletics when he was home. He was a pilot and used to be away for 11 months of every year growing up, unfortunately. But when he was home, he used to take me to little athletics. And I remember one particular year, I came a draw with somebody else in a 100-meter sprint. And I remember my dad pulling me aside saying that they're going to rerun the race, but this time, you know, don't look around at the end to see how close you are to the next person. You've got to look straight ahead and you've got to keep running all the way through. So when I did rerun the race, I just kept on running and running and kept on running towards the hills, and everyone was going, you can come back now, you can stop, you know. So, my parents had a lot to do with, cheering me on and that sort of thing, really. Yeah, giving support.
I had that same thing with my parents. Like any activity I did, with the support that they gave me, it's like I could have been in last place, but they would be so proud of anything I did. And to me, that's just rewarding, because like I'm trying. I mean, I hated running. So like when you mentioned you just started running, I'd be like, Can I just go? Can I leave right now? I'm good. I don't need to run that race again. But I just liked having that support. And even today, it's like I could do something bad, not bad, bad, but like not the correct way. And they'd be like, get back up there, do it, get back out there. And to me, that's so important nowadays
Oh,
with
it's
kids.
absolutely fantastic. I mean, people who have had parents that were very involved in their life, particularly up to the age of seven, I think are very, very lucky, to be perfectly honest. And even though my dad was away a lot, when he was home that 1 month of every year, he was very involved with us kids. Yeah.
That fun question we're asked growing up is, what was that dream job that you were wanting? So, what was that dream job that you were hoping to pursue once you're past schooling?
Yeah, in my earlier days, I used to think being a phys ed teacher at school would be the perfect job. So in a way, I did make that happen. It's just that I started my own business with personal training, and then that went into group training much later on when I decided to study neuro-linguistic programming, which was all about rewiring your mind and about rapid transformation. And yeah, I used to round up then groups of ladies, and we used to do more of a holistic program, so more mental, physical, and nutrition. We used to do nutrition in my kitchen, do the training together, and then mind processes as well. So yeah,
When did you start personal training for yourself?
I started personal training when I was probably around about the age of 19. After high school, I went and traveled overseas for a couple of years. I went and worked as an au pair girl in Germany. I'd been to England just before that to visit family that I'd never met before. I went to Norway, worked in hotels over there.
Oh.
And then I went to America, to Dallas, Texas, and worked in, I think it was a nightclub over there. So, yeah, I started when I got back from that journey, and yeah, started personal training, then branched into doing these groups quite a bit later on.
What was challenging for you through the fitness aspect? Was it kind of easy for your body to get into it? Was there a signature kind of type of fitness that you enjoyed? What was challenging for you?
What started it for me was I was modeling at the time, and I used to get these jobs where I used to get remarks from the people that were hiring the models, like I didn't quite fit into the jeans properly, like my backside wouldn't fill out the jeans, or my hips were too small, or something like that. So, I decided to do bodybuilding because I'd met somebody who said, you can actually change the shape of your physique through going to the gym. And I was fascinated with that. So that's how my journey with that started. Basically, it was a dissatisfaction with my own physique. Went to the gym, started putting on shape and size. And before you knew it, I was doing my first little state title competition, and then from there I went into the nationals and I won that. And yeah, it was at back in my day it was only bodybuilding. We didn't have figure fitness or sport model and all the other categories that they do today. Now it's just exploded all over the world. It's incredible.
With bodybuilding, it definitely has that kind of concern with people on getting to a certain look. With you, did anyone have a concern on the specific on how you should look, where they were telling you how you to look instead of you controlling that yourself? Do you like having that power of saying, I want my body to be in this shape because that is what's satisfying me?
Well, it was quite easy back then because, as I said, there was only one category, there was only one look. It was female bodybuilding. And it didn't really matter what they wanted. In the end, it's what you can produce, isn't it? So I produced a physique. I went into the competition, and before you knew it, I was known as the number one female bodybuilder in Australia for being the most feminine, having the most feminine physique, which was a lovely title to have, I guess. And then I sort of made a range of poster images, and that got my image out a lot more. I think I sold something like 60,000 copies around Australia. And that's how I was discovered with gladiators. They kept on coming across my image around Australia. So, with bodybuilding with females, it's just still trying to have your body aesthetically in proportion. Apparently, your neck, your bicep flexed, and your calf flexed should all be of the same size. But whether you're lucky enough to get that like that, that's another story altogether. So, yeah.
When you were younger, you mentioned the performance. With being at the competitions, being on that stage, did that kind of have that fulfillment of that performance aspect for you?
I was still always very nervous before I went on, but I think, to get up to, I think my biggest show was performing in front of 2,000 people, and then there was news cameras there and lots of photos going off. So, yeah, it was quite a buzz. Doesn't mean that I wasn't nervous before I went on, but definitely I've always liked to perform. I mean, even in my modeling years, I was always performing. You were always doing catwalk or, I traveled around the world doing modeling for many, many years. I went to Japan, China, models in Sydney on the other side of Australia. Where else did I go? Hong Kong. There were lots of places I went to. So, all of that is performing, and then moving into much later on into bodybuilding. I think performance as a young girl, performance as a model, and then performance as a bodybuilder then made it easy transition for me to go into gladiators and continue performing there.
You talked about going and being on stage in front of 2,000 people and transitioning to now to even more thousands of people with gladiators. Talk about how you mentioned that they found your photos. Did you have any idea of what gladiators was from other countries prior to being told about it in Australia?
Not really. I didn't do a great deal of research on the other countries. I did know it was pretty big. I think I watched a couple of shows from England and a couple of shows from America. But back in those days, I didn't realise there were other countries doing it as well, like Russia, etc. I had no idea. We just learned as we got onto the job, basically. Yeah, the training was minimal. They just threw us into it and away you went.
A question a lot of people like to ask is, how did you get your name Rebel? Talk about that opportunity and how did that come about?
Yeah, so we were allowed to choose our own name, and I think I came up with a couple of others. Don't ask me what they were now, but they didn't like it. And they said, I think I probably wanted to be like a halo or an angel or something girly like that. But if they didn't like it, they said, no, we've got a name for you. And they said, no, we want to call you Rebel. And my first reaction inside my head was, oh, no, I don't like Rebel. And then I went home and thought about it. And I thought, well, what are you doing right now? You're rebelling against the name of Rebel. So maybe that does suit you. You're always been somebody that, followed your heart, made your own pathway. So, and Rebel is a name that you could play up to. It's you could be a good rebel or a bad rebel or naughty or a nice rebel or have, parts of that character. I played all of those things within Rebel. Sometimes I was naughty, sometimes I was nice. Most of the time I was just a bit cheeky. I used to run around the auditorium and hold up my hand to all the kids after each show, and I used to reach over to high five me, and right when they were about to touch my hand, I used to pull it away and say, nah, give me $5. So I used to go, give me $5. And they'd reach over and then I'd pull my hand away and say, no, give me $5. So I was cheeky. The kids loved it. And all in all, I think Rebel was a really good name for me.
Do you feel that you still have Rebel inside you today?
Definitely. I definitely got a rebel inside me. I always have done. And but I would say I'm rebel with a cause. And my cause has always been to help other people. I 100% believe I was put on the planet to help and to be of service. My name Barbara in itself, when you look it up in a baby book, is means helpful. So don't know where it's come from, but I always feel best when I'm making other people happy.
With Gladiators, what event did you enjoy the best?
There were a few I enjoyed. I really enjoyed doing Powerball. I used to sort of love sprinting and then launching myself at the contender and slamming them down to the ground. That was really good fun. I used to also really enjoy doing Atlasphere. That was running inside a 400 kilo steel spherical ball. It was particularly good fun when they used to start the ball high up in the corners of the arena on a ramp, and you'd have four men on each corner of the ball, and they would rock it back and forward until the whistle blew, and then they used to push the ball, and it used to crum, 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 go down the ramp and go flying into the middle. That was really good fun. You'd have to run fast. You should usually had a helmet on and then a head camera as well, so that sort of you had to get your balance right with that. But those two would probably have been my favorite. Also, I really used to like doing suspension bridge, which was very much like Jewel, except for you were on a bridge that sort of sunk down and back up again, and it was wobbly. So again, you used to have a lot of balance and a lot of upper body strength as well. Yeah. So I think those three were my favorite.
Was there any event that you wish you got the opportunity to do?
Yeah, there was one. It was a new one that came in towards the end. Just trying to think of the name of it now. You got me there. But it was like you were on a bungee,
Oh,
like on a bungee rope.
swing shots.
Swing shot. That's it. So you know it better than I do. Yeah, I used to love swing shot when we were practicing, but for some reason I never got a shot on that.
I always watched that show, and the one event that I wish I could do well was hang tough. Just
Oh, yeah.
like gliding in the air on those rings. I mean, anytime I see rings, it's like that's the first thing I think of is hang tough, and I'm like trying to like do it, and then I fail, and I'm like, okay, well, I gotta get back up and try it again. But that was the one event that I just loved the concept of, was that event.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of a little story. One time when I was back in my hometown of Perth in between filming, I was sitting at a train station and I remember I deliberately wore my hair under a cap and sunglasses on and tried to disguise myself because at the time I could not walk down the street without the little kids yelling out, "Rebel, rebel." And sometimes that was great and I enjoyed it, but this particular day, I'm not sure why. I didn't feel like I wanted to be recognized. So, but I was at the train station and hiding behind a book, and these kids still were calling out my name. And I just thought, no, just don't respond, don't respond. And then the train came along. They jumped on the train. It wasn't my train, so they jumped on. And I saw them doing hang tough down the middle of the train inside on the handles that you hold. I couldn't believe it. And that's the impact the show had on, you know, they were playing it in the schoolyards, they were playing it on trains. It was crazy. The amount of fan mail I got, it was amazing as well. I think I was the only one that admitted that I had actually responded to every single letter. I just loved it. For me, it was all about the kids, you know. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Did you feel like a celebrity after going from season one to season two, where it's like maybe wasn't in your mindset of I'm wanting to be a celebrity, but this opportunity kind of changed all your guys' lives overnight?
Look, it definitely made you feel like a celebrity. You know, I never really thought of myself as that, but I mean, when you come off a television show where back in our day we had, you know, 2 million plus watches every Saturday night, so you forget that. And when you're suddenly walking down the street and people are calling out your name, or all of a sudden you didn't have to stand in a queue outside a, you know, a restaurant that didn't take bookings, or you know, they called you up the front of a queue to get into a nightclub. All of a sudden it was like, wow, I'm getting a lot of attention here. So yeah, it's after you've been on TV, you definitely recognize that, you know, people are recognizing you. And also you're doing a lot of publicity as well. You're doing a lot of magazines, you're doing a lot of newspaper, you're doing a lot of radio interviews, that sort of thing. So yeah.
With the outside opportunities, is there one that's like memorable or a fond memory of yours that being a gladiator got you to be able to do that?
I think there were probably a lot, and still today, it gets my foot in here and there and everywhere. But I don't think there's one in particular that's jumping to the forefront of my mind at the moment, Alex. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of things over the years. I mean, it was lovely getting on to telethon every single year here in Perth. We have a big raising money for you know, for kids in need. And every year I'd get invited onto that to read out the donations, or to fly by helicopter down south to auction off the telethon home. So those sorts of things, yeah, those sorts of things were definitely an honor to be able to be included. I wouldn't have been doing them otherwise, I don't think.
Looking at your experience with gladiators, what would be the biggest thing it taught you about yourself?
The biggest thing would be that I'm a lot more resilient than what I think I am. And that's been a pattern in my life, definitely with like looking after my mum, who was terminally ill for a long time, and being able to come through that. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, I had an accident, and being able to come through that and everything that I've been through in the last couple of years. Resilience is a word that continues to pop up. I think my parents were extremely resilient. My father was in Second World War. He was in the Vietnam War. He sailed around the world single-handedly, nearly died several times doing that. Yeah, my mother, you know, survived World War II. She was separated from her mother and passed to a stranger who put her on the last boat out of Germany. And then as a 3-year-old was wandering around in somebody's backyard garden trying to survive. So both my parents have got huge stories behind them, and I think that's got a lot to do with a part of my DNA, I think, and being resilient and all the things that I've been through in my life, the highs, the lows, you know, the celebrations. It's all made me who I am today, definitely.
Off camera, we've gotten to know each other a lot more, and a person that really played a big part in your life was your mother. Talk about the bond that you had with your mom and what a big inspiration she was for you.
Yeah, the bond that I had with my mom was so strong, particularly in the end, because I was full-time carer to her while she was terminally ill. I thought that would only go for a few months because I was told that's all she had to live. But through my love and care and doing really a wellness program for her and living with her, her life ex got extended for a couple of years. I learned so much during that period, particularly seeing my mum, how resilient she was. The whole journey, Alex, was just such a turbulent ride. It was like being on a roller coaster. I mean, she came close to death so many times during that 2-year period. I mean, and on top of it, she broke a hand, she broke a shoulder, and then she was in a wheelchair, then she was out. I mean, it was just incredible. So yeah, she was just such an inspiration to me. And I just learned a lot through that whole process about you know, being grateful for every day of your life, I think it's a huge life-changing experience watching somebody take their last breath in your arms. It definitely gave me a big slap across the face to wake up and just to enjoy life every single day, to milk it for everything that you've got, because none of us know when our last day is going to be. It doesn't matter how healthy you are mentally or physically. It could just be the last moment or the wrong moment on the road, somebody else's fault or whatever, and boom, you're gone. So that is how I live my life now. I find joy in every single day and in everything that I'm doing. Even now, definitely, even with my challenges, I try to see the silver lining of it all. You know, I've got this next operation coming up on the 21st of May. I'm not looking forward to that. They're actually going to shorten both my radius and my ulna. They're going to rotate the bones. They're going to shift the bones. They're taking a bone graft from my hip and then putting an implant down the ulna. So it's something I'm not looking forward to at all, and will take, you know, a good 6 months to recover from, if not another year and a half. So, yeah, mum, when I go through things like that, I just always look back to the journey I had with my mum and how my mum handled it. You know, she handled it being very humble and she was just an absolute trooper. She really was. Again, resilience. Amazing. So, yeah, that's what I've learned from her.
I love that you mentioned how she taught you about living your life to the fullest, because I always am told from my friends and family, it's like, go out and do what you want to do. Like, if you need to spend money on something and you have it, go do it, because you're going to remember that memory for a lifetime than sitting at home saying, I wish I did that. So that's been something that I've been challenged with, is you got to take this opportunity to live your life to the fullest. Because like you said, you never know when that last breath's going to happen or the last day is going to be. And you would rather remember that opportunity that you took or that trip that you went on than you didn't get to do it, and saying, why didn't I do that?
Absolutely, Alex. There's a lot of people that will live their entire life without touching the good silverware. I'm like, touch the good silverware. Use it. Celebrate every single day. Always tell your loved ones how much you love them. And, yeah, just be joyful. Find joy every single day. Be grateful, you know. Start the morning with a beautiful walk out in nature. Listen to the birds. You know, appreciate the trees that are around you and the walkway that you're on. Because, as I say, you never know when your last day is going to be. So, yeah, that's my philosophy.
Did you know exactly what you wanted to do after Gliers? Did fitness really play a big part to after that time to where you are today?
Fitness definitely played a big part in me being able to look after my mom. Definitely played a huge part. I mean, how I went in and how I came out of that experience are two completely different people. I mean, I went in very strong, very powerful, and I came out very depleted, I would say. And yeah, that played a big part. So that's why I always tell people, be mentally and physically strong as possible in every day in life, because you never know what's just around the corner. So yeah, that's played a really big part. And sorry, what was the question again?
Did you know exactly what path you wanted to take also in addition to fitness?
Yeah. So during that sad time with my mum, I had a lot of time to think what was important and what wasn't. So a lot of the things that I thought was important previous to mum are no longer important to me anymore. For example, I no longer collect belongings. In actual fact, I'm trying to get rid, donate or sell basically everything that I own, because it's just not important to me anymore. Life experiences are important to me now. And so my plan for the future after my next operation and I've recovered is to actually buy myself a motorhome and to go traveling around Australia. And I want to strip myself of absolutely everything. And it might sound weird to people, but I have a feeling that the less you own, the happier you'll be. And I just want to have experiences. I want to be able to jump into waterfalls, and I want to be fit and able to do so. So again, yes, I will continue after my next operation to put on as much muscle as I can without looking like a bodybuilder, but, you know, to be strong, to have my balance, and my mental health, even during recovery, I will continue with my meditation and listening to my frequencies and that sort of thing. So I can, you know, follow this pathway that I've got this vision for. Yeah.
Are we talking about like a tour bus motorhome or one of those smaller ones?
Yeah. At the moment, I'm researching all of that. The latest one yesterday, which I was laughing even to myself, I thought, oh my God, my ultimate motorhome would be one that is amphibious. It goes from the road straight into the water and turns into a boat. So they've been producing those for the last few years, but I've only discovered them yesterday because I actually adore boating. I love boating. I love part of my highest values is to be is health and freedom. So every decision that I make drives me from my health and freedom values. So, yeah, I would love to have a motorhome or a caravan. These ones are, they're a caravan that you can tow, but once they get to the water, they float. They have a motor and they turn into a motorboat. And I just think, wow, that would be amazing because I'll be able to cover more and do more exciting adventures. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people after this interview listening to it, they're now going to start researching that because they probably had no idea that existed. But now I'm fascinated to see what these boats look like or these motorhomes to boats look like because that's just amazing.
Yeah, it is. The one that I saw yesterday was called a seal van. So you can look that up. I think it's just under sealvan.com, but absolutely incredible. And I've just sent them a message yesterday just asking if they're selling those in Australia. I think they're made in Turkey, and I think they've been around for the last couple of years. So I'm keen to find out how much they cost and also if they sell them here. So, yeah, at the moment I'm going through a big period of actually selling off everything that I own or donating it. And that's been an experience in itself of just letting go. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, my mum really has just changed my life through that experience with her it was such a wake-up call for me. Like, life is precious. We're all going to die someday. Mm-hmm. And most of us don't want to talk about death. It's something that sort of we all think is going to happen at the end of our life. But that's not necessarily the case. Unfortunately, I've lost quite a few friends over the years. A very close girlfriend of mine passed away a couple of years ago, and she was into health and fitness and was also, like myself, not married, lived alone with a little dog, and she suddenly got cancer and within 2 years was gone. It was very, very sad. But again, another wake-up call. We just don't know what's around the corner. So go and live life now and be joyful every single day and be grateful every single day for what you got and tell the people who you love that you love them. Yeah.
When you're not working, when you're not doing the things you like to do, what do you like to do for fun that maybe people don't know that you like to do? A secret thing, a hidden talent? What's something new that maybe people don't know about?
I am living quite a peaceful life at the moment. I meditate twice a day to frequencies. And that's been amazing. I connect with nature as much as possible. So it's nothing, I don't do anything out of the ordinary. It's still always very aligned with my values. I spend a lot of time selling my stuff and giving away my stuff. I've still got one games room still to go. So all my spare time is done on that. And also at the moment with my recovery, I'm doing exercise physiology at the moment, hydrotherapy. I've just started back at the gym after 3 years now of not going to the gym at all. So I've lost a lot of muscle, and my whole body composition has changed. So a lot of my time is getting rid of belongings, decluttering, I call it, training and recovery. And I can't really think of anything else besides doing lovely things like picnics with girlfriends that I really do with my spare time. Everything is, my decisions are all made based on my future self and after this next operation. So, and my future self is driving around in an amazing motorhome with an online business. I will need to probably rebrand, not rebrand myself, but reinvent myself is a good word. So I want an online global business, or even just a business that deals with Australia. I have some ideas for that, which I'm keeping under wraps at the moment. And yeah, that's about it really, Alex. Nothing overly exciting, but I think the next stage of my life is going to be pretty exciting. I want to document, I want to definitely document what I'm going through with this next operation and the recovery. So I think people sort of think that my life is just amazing all the time, but it's not. There's, like everyone, we have our ups and downs, and I think I need to showcase a little bit of the downside in my socials. So I'll be recording a lot of the operation recovery, and then you know, training, getting the motor home, going off on my journey. And I want to document a lot of the journey, where I'm going, how that's making me feel, health and fitness tips that I'm doing along the way to stay in shape, to keep a positive mindset, different people that I'm meeting, all of that sort of stuff. So I'm super excited about my future self.
Talking about the highs and lows of the recovery process, if someone that's listening to this interview that's going through a recovery right now, what would you tell them as a tips or advice to overcome those challenges, keep those positives going, and see that progress that they're making?
Look, just to say patient, and just to remember, you're not the only one out there going through that. And what I used to do a lot of the time when I was feeling a bit woe is me, if I did have a day like that, I would always put things into perspective and think about, there's always somebody else out there going through a lot worse than what you are. Yeah. And just to remember that the sun always comes back out again, always. So just to hang in there, just to be patient, and just to do all the little things that will help yourself. Remember that there is support out there if you're feeling lonely, and there's been plenty of times during my recovery and through my dark days over the years that, you know, I felt very alone, and then I would remember, you're not alone. You're not alone. There are people, so many caring people out there in the world, and so many beautiful communities and different networks. So you've got to reach out. You've got to reach out to these people and let them know what you're going through, because there's always going to be somebody there to support you, always.
Something that people might know as an OG of Gladiators is Gladiators did just come out with a new season. What has been the proudest moment of seeing fans from the old series watching the new series and the new generation of fans that the show is bringing?
So what's been the proudest moment of the new Gladiators watching the old Gladiators? Was that it?
So what has been a proud moment of the fans from the original series following the new series, but the show also bringing a new generation of fans that are now fascinated about seeing the original?
I don't know if there's been a proudest moment. I just think I just love watching, you know, what would I say here? There's just been so many. For me, it's been actually more about watching the new Gladiators watch themselves. I've connected with a lot of them, you know, through social media, and we've had some beautiful conversations together. And, you know, for example, seeing them stepping off a train, they've been filming themselves stepping off a train and then turning around, and they've got a life-size photo of themselves on the side of the train. So those sorts of things, and then just going, oh, my God, I can't believe it, you know, them seeing themselves larger than life is something that I can relate to because I had all those feelings too when I was in the show. So I haven't really connected with a lot of the fans. I am only connecting probably more with the fans that are coming onto my social pages. And it's been just lovely to reconnect with some that remember me from the old days. So that's been very, very heartwarming for me. So I hope that answers your question in a roundabout way.
It did. Looking at the journey that you've been on, in a few words, how would you describe what that journey has been like for you and your rise to the challenge?
Oh my God. It has been long and winding with some extreme highs and some extreme lows and lots of celebrations and lots of memories. And, you know, I think the older you get, the more you realize that this is just a long and winding pathway. And as I say, I think, you know, just having resilience and being strong mentally and physically will help you get through absolutely everything. That's probably my most important piece of advice. If you can somehow go and learn how to rewire your brain, be positive, have a healthy attitude, have different perspectives, don't have assumptions about people. Anything to do with the brain is and the body, that would be my biggest piece of advice. It'll get you through absolutely everything. Yeah.
As you're stepping into that next chapter in your life, the final question to ask you, for someone that's listening to this interview based on your journey and experience, what tips or advice would you give them to overcome obstacles, accomplish their goals, and rise to the challenge?
I definitely would say that, you know, have a look at the patterns in your life and see if there's some consistency with certain patterns there, because that way you can sort of plan ahead that that might happen again. And definitely when you are going through challenges, take action, reach out to people, understand that you're not alone, be patient, do all the things that you can possibly do to help yourself get through it with your health and nutrition. What else would I say? Yeah, I think that's about it, really. I hope I haven't left anything out.
Barbara, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about your rise to the challenge. You're inspiring so many people, and we are excited to see what the future looks like for you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Alex.
Remember to follow and subscribe on all major audio platforms. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel so you can know the video format. What path do you take to accomplish the goals that you design?